Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:12 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is June 11th. The Nasdaq today was down about 5%. Dow Jones down about 6%. The vast majority of markets in Europe down about 4 to 5%. So the knock-on effects from what Jay Powell had to say yesterday have been digested, and amid short-term overbought conditions, we are now seeing some unwinding of that. Now, it's looking increasingly likely that some of the breakouts that we've seen are going to fail. When we look at the Nasdaq, it has ample room in which to consolidate. So let's just, I think it is important at this stage to pay attention to the weekly charts, because it is very easy to get wrapped up in the gyrations that we're seeing from one day to the next. We have seen a very significant reaction against the prevailing trend that was between February and March. We've seen an equally impressive rebound, and the Nasdaq got all the way up to test the big psychological 10,000 level and has subsequently encountered resistance there. If this is still a medium-term bull market, which is to retain any semblance of consistency, then in an ideal world, it will find support in the region of the 200-day moving average. We would get perhaps a 6 to 9 month consolidation between 8.5 and 10,000, and subsequently then break on the upside. That's the, I think, at this stage, best case scenario. When we then think about the S&P 500 in the same light, then we can see, for example, that it managed to get back above its 200-day moving average, and it is now testing the psychological 3,000 level, which had been an area of resistance all the way through from early 2018 until the end of 2019. Now, the big question is whether this region of the 200-day moving average and the 3,000 level is going to represent support. I think it is a bit of an ask, considering the size of the downward dynamic that we saw in here today, for that to be the case. Much more important is that the 1,000-day moving average now represents support. I think it would be reasonable to forgive the 3 to 4 week sojourn below the 1,000-day moving average back in March, provided the index doesn't make a habit of it. One of the defining characteristics of secular bull markets is that by and large the indices do tend to find support during medium-term corrections in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and the Nasdaq did that. Now the big question is whether that area is going to be support for the S&P 500. If it is, well, then that would be a reasonable pullback following a bear market rebound. We could then potentially see some ranging and prices starting to do better from there. Of course, that would be contingent on this area holding. If, on the other hand, the 1,000-day moving average fails to offer support, and subsequently the 200-day moving average represents resistance, well, then we're talking about a bear market, and not simply a bear market, but a downtrend. And that, I think, is something that we do need to be alert to. It isn't all roses out there, after all. Now, when we look at some of the indices that pulled back even more violently, what is particularly noteworthy is that the Russell 2000 is sitting on a weekly key reversal. And it is occurring from the region of the 200-day moving average and the lower side of the overhead trading range. Now, one thing that I believe is important to highlight is when we look at the exact same charts, well, there have been occasions in the past where the 1,000-day and the 200-day moving average came close together, and we're there right now. But it is looking increasingly likely that the 200-day moving average is now going to cross down and through the 1,000-day moving average. And that is generally consistent with a bear market overall. So we have to then marry up the potential that Main Street and Wall Street, having had a significant divergence over the course of the last 3 months, are now going to correlate once more. Logically, large companies depend on small companies for business. When small companies are in really very difficult situations economically, then they are less likely to purchase from large companies. That's equally true of consumers. Now, when we think about the significant rebound that we've had over the course of the last 3 months, there are two important factors that have helped to drive it. The first is the massive swell of liquidity. But we are potentially now at a bit of a hiatus in terms of the quantity of assistance that's going to be provided. When we look at how much the size of the Fed's balance sheet expanded in April, well, it went from 5.23 to approximately 6.6, so well in excess of a trillion. It was about half a trillion in May, but it's anticipated to be 120 billion in June. So the pace of assistance is moderating considerably, and that therefore the tailwind that the stock market is getting from liquidity is moderating. Now, that is less important to the total assets of central banks because that is heavily influenced not only by the size of balance sheets but also by the strength or otherwise of the currency. And the dollar index was in negative territory again over the course of yesterday, but it unwound some of it in here today. Now, I think it's important to highlight that the euro spent the vast majority of the day pretty much unchanged. And then in the last hour and a half of trading, it really pulled back sharply. Now, when we look at the potential for dollar strength here, we have a short-term oversold condition. If the dollar starts to strengthen and we are at a the euro is a little overbought, it's in the region of a previous area of resistance. There is certainly scope here for some flight to quality. Well, any strength in the dollar is going to act as a liquidity inhibiting factor for the rest of the world as well. And now when we look at, for example, some of those indices in Europe, they bear a striking resemblance to the Russell 2000. So we've had a meaningful rebound in the Euro Stoxx index. It went from 250 to 367. That's a meaningful advance. But now it's in the first area of potential resistance, and we are now seeing evidence that resistance is in fact being encountered. And here also, there is the potential that the 200-day moving average is in fact going to cross down and through the 1,000-day moving average. So we are potentially now at an important juncture where there is the clear scope that we could be in for a lengthy hiatus in terms of stock market advances. The enthusiasm that this was a bull market that was going to rise forever, which was the complete opposite of the bearishness being expressed back in March, well, that was some of the clearest evidence that we have short-term overbought conditions. When we look at the FTSE 250, it's again the exact same pattern where we see resistance coming through at the lower side of the overhead trading range, and here the 200-day moving average has already crossed down and through the 1,000-day moving average. When we look at the Nikkei, it had rallied really quite impressively back above the 20,000 level, coming right back to test the upper side of the overhead trading range. It was down 600 points in here today. It's likely to be down considerably more than that tomorrow. The big question is whether the 2,000, excuse me, the 20,000 level is going to hold, but it is likely that we are going to find that out in the not so distant future. Well, when we then think about what's going on, well, the Federal Reserve believes that the so actually, let me go back and talk about liquidity. There was one reason. Liquidity was one of the reasons why the market went up. The other reason was that investors believed that we were going to have a V-shaped recovery. That is looking increasingly unlikely. We've had a V-shaped recovery in the Nasdaq. We have not had a V-shaped recovery in just about anything else. And the Federal Reserve said yesterday that it might be 2 years before the economic contraction posted over 2020 is unwound with recovery. So that's, I think, a very significant factor. Investors are now beginning to consider that there is the clear potential that we are going to have a lengthy period of economic underperformance, and that some companies are going to have a lot of distress. Well, if we look at some of the individual shares, Microsoft has been one of the best performers. It bounced very emphatically from the region of its 200-day moving average. The 1,000-day moving average is nearly 50% below where prices peaked earlier on this week. When we just zoom in a little, it got all the way up to a new high, and now it is failing. So it does have a little range underneath, and it is dipping down into that range in here today. Follow through tomorrow would represent a failed upside break. The problem with a failed upside break is that the most likely scenario is that when the dynamic of the failure is greater than the dynamic of the breakout, then it will likely go back down and test to the lower side of the range. Well, the lower side of the range is at 140, and this is one of the biggest shares in the index. Amazon was in positive territory for a good part of today, but finished in negative territory, so also looking like a failed break above the $2,600 area, and this also looks really quite likely to consolidate. And again, when we think about where are the respective areas of potential support, well, now the 200-day moving average coincides with the upper side of the underlying trading range. It is not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that it could come back down and test that area of support around the 2,000 level. These are among the best performing shares. Now let's look at some of those that had the bigger pullbacks. Disney is an example there, and even there, it didn't really pull back by nearly as much as some of the weaker shares, but it has clearly now encountered resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, and in the space of a week has pulled right back down and through the 1,000-day moving average as well. So there is clear potential here that we are going to see an additional period of ranging, which could be anywhere. It could potentially find support anywhere between current levels and $180, and then subsequently range again. So this is obviously a major trend in consistency. Then when we look at something like McDonald's, well, McDonald's does drive-throughs in a large number of its restaurants. But it did phenomenally well between 2015 and 2019. The share went from 100 to 220. And this is for what is effectively a company that it certainly grows and certainly has respectable cash flows, but nobody was anticipating that it could grow at that kind of rate. Well, it gave up most of the advance during the pullback in March. Now it is encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, and this is a second higher rea or excuse me, lower rally high. So it is quite likely that we're going to see additional weakness, and I think it would be reasonable to hope that it should find support somewhere around the 1,000-day moving average, which was the most recent area of support. So this is obviously a rather important juncture that we're seeing for some of these companies. Well, then I think it is also worth looking at some of the companies that have pulled back most aggressively. And Boeing is certainly one of those. It put in a Type 3 top formation between 2018 and the beginning of this year. The company has been sustained with financial engineering for most of the last decade. They have denuded their engineering department, and it has been run by the accountants. And unfortunately, this financialization of the share has been killing people. And they don't seem to have a good answer to how to address that problem. So the potential for growth is likely to be significantly inhibited, and that is even before we think about the number of airlines that are still in dire straits, and that the likelihood of them ordering a range of new airplanes is going to be really quite low. This is the kind of share that could potentially form a Type 3 bottom and could range in a volatile manner for the foreseeable future. Now, when we then think about how are the other assets performing, well, gold was reasonably steady in here today. It was in positive territory in early trading, but did take some selling pressure as we approached the close. Silver was in positive territory in early trading, but gave it all up and is now back below the $18 area. Copper prices have been doing really quite well, but they were down 9 cents in here today, so the short-term overbought condition now looks like it will be unwound. Now the question is whether the lower side of this trading range is going to hold, and ideally, will the area around 250 to 2 or 240 represent support? There is a medium-term sequence of lower rally highs, so we're at a critical juncture. It is either going to find support soon, or we're going to resume the downtrend, and this is the big question. How much of a decline in asset prices are central banks going to tolerate before they ramp up their liquidity measures again? Because the global economy is still under stress. The coronavirus has not yet been got under control. The countries which did not, and states in the USA which did not experience big outbreaks in February and March, are now seeing that their cases are rising. I think there is a tendency among investors to think, well, this must be a second wave. I think that's a gross inaccuracy. When we look at the places that were most heavily hit, like Italy or New York, for example, then they're not seeing their cases ramping up again. This is, in fact, much more like places that avoided a big spike in their cases originally, now starting to fall susceptible to some increase in their cases. Places like Texas, Florida, Arizona, and even here in California, and then obviously also in Latin America. All of this helps to highlight that we are not on top of this yet, that travel restrictions are likely to remain in place for at least the next few months. Then, when you look at what London is proposing in terms of public transportation, it's completely unworkable. There is just no way that the tube is going to be able to function on 90% less occupancy. That is going to ensure that the vast majority of the workforce are not going to be able to use public transport to get to work. And unless one lives within close proximity of their place of work, then we are going to be living with work from home orders for the foreseeable future. And I think that that is now starting to be priced into the market. One thing, though, that we do need to be aware of, because it is going to be integral to what happens in terms of liquidity, is the bond market. There is a mismatch evolving between the types of debt that the US Treasury is issuing and those that the Federal Reserve is buying. Well, the Federal Reserve has to buy the debt that the US Treasury is producing, that is, or issuing. That is the essence of modern monetary theory, and we are living in that era today. It would represent a significant uptick in the quantitative easing program. So that is why the stock market is taking fright today, because with the announcement yesterday that they're going to only buy $120 billion, it suggests that the Federal Reserve is, in fact, rather worried about asset price inflation, and that they're not going to provide the assistance that's required to the bond markets, and particularly the US Treasury, until we see a moderation in asset prices. So they're in fact engineering this pullback. The big question then is, how much further does it have to fall before they come through with additional stimulative measures? And it could quite easily be 10%, or it could be more than that. The big question is, how is the market going to react to the fact that the economies of the world are still experiencing a great deal of pressure, and that the measures implemented to date do little more than stimulate asset prices without, in fact, putting a lot more money in people's pockets? And we have already got evidence of social unrest movements sparked by the lower living standards people have experienced as a result of the lockdowns. Well, that pretty much ensures we're not going to have a return to lockdowns in most places. But it probably means there's going to have to be a lot more fiscal stimulus. And until that, in fact, is delivered, we're likely to have downward pressure on prices. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.